RadioInfluence.com.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Jeff Crushell here, Craig Moonen, and the con man behind the glass keeping us on track. Hey, we are talking sports vision today, performance vision. More than sports, it goes well beyond sports. We are joined by Dr. Daniel Labey here momentarily, assistant clinical professor at the Harvard School of Medicine. You can check out his websites, I Care for Kids and 20 Over 8. This is a real interesting topic today, because, you know, we always often talk about the trainable attributes of performance. And we're talking business, we're talking school, we're talking, you know, sports as well. Vision is one of those things that is very trainable, believe it or not. But there are attributes to vision that you're born with, and that might set you down the path to your profession. It might set you down the path towards the sports that you participate in. It's sort of a nature versus nurture conversation, you know, if we really get down to it.
Yeah, and you, as you mentioned, there's pretty much every sport out there has some aspect of it that can be improved by having good sports vision. And to a degree, a lot of that can be trained. And that's one of those untapped potential areas that we've talked about in overall sport performance and overall human performance that's really only come on relatively recently, in that people are now looking for every possible edge that they can get, and sport vision is just one of those.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's very trainable. We're going to talk to Dr. Labey, who's done years and years of research on the topic, and it goes, again, well beyond sports. It's people trying to recover from concussions or head injuries. It's people trying to learn how to drive peripheral vision. It's improving performance on the road, in the workplace, as well as sports. So many applications, so we're looking forward to the conversation, which brings us to the text question of the day. We have one more set of lift tickets to Marmot Basin to give away, and one more midweek 50% gift certificate at the Mount Robson Inn, the Crush Marmot Basin, Mount Robson Inn, get up there giveaway. So text us. It's a free text, 101260. At the end of the show, we'll be picking somebody from our text pool to get up to Marmot for the last two weekends. And I'm telling you right now, spectacular spring conditions, some of the best snow of the year. The text question of the day, Moo. Are you born with it? Is vision one of those things you're born with? Well, we could argue that, but is it? When we come talk about talent and performance, are we born with certain attributes, or is it something that's trainable? What do you guys think out there? Are you born with it and we develop it, or are you put into an environment where you can prosper? That's the big question of the day.
Yeah, is it the Tiger Woods, Williams sisters in tennis situation where it just seems like they came out of the womb and they were surrounded by the sport and they grew up to be at the highest levels? Or is it one of these things where we could just go around in some random place in Zimbabwe, pick up an athlete and turn him into the greatest hockey player ever, as long as we surround him with the right tools, the right training, and the right scenario?
I think about Bubba Watson Bubba, my Ukrainian coming out at me. Hey, Bubba, how about some pierogies out there? I think about Bubba winning the Masters last weekend. And you know, here's a guy that never had a coach, never had a swing coach, never took a lesson. He didn't do it himself, don't get me wrong. He's had help along the way. But it makes me think, if we took a talented, young, interested young athlete and just immersed him in a golf culture, could we create a Masters champion? Food for thought?
Absolutely.
Vision's one of those great things. Text question
us.
Of the day. Text question, 101260. Well, let's get to it. We are joined by the assistant clinical professor at the Harvard School of Medicine, sports vision researcher, Dr. Daniel Labey. Dr. Labey, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're pretty excited about this conversation. I've been looking forward to it. You know, way back in the 90s, there was research being done in baseball. I was just getting involved in the Blue Jays at that point in time, and I knew there were some visual training studies going on. It wasn't really in the norm at all. People really weren't talking about training vision or understanding visual performance. But my, oh my, how far have we come to this day? And you've been a big part of that, and your group has also been a big part of pushing the boundaries when it comes to visual performance.
Yeah, it's been amazing. 1992 is when we started working with the Los Angeles Dodgers and their vision program, and trying to understand what kind of vision is needed to excel and to have, perform well at the elite level in professional baseball. I wonder if those are that's the work that you heard about back then.
That is exactly the work I heard about, and it was interesting because we knew it was going on. We were kind of jealous because we wanted to be part of it, because is there a more visual sport than baseball? I mean, holy cow, hitting that baseball, it might be, you know, at the major league level, one of the hardest things to do in sports, but we know that visual performance has implications well beyond sport, but almost in every facet of your life.
Yeah, well, baseball is a great, you know, example of the need for excellent vision. But as you mentioned, it really spans across everything from driving on a foggy, rainy, you know, evening to try to get home safely, to doing well in school, and to, even if you're not playing at the elite level, playing in sports in high school or in a weekend sport, just to do well, to feel good about it.
Right. Well, I have a question for you, Dr. Labey. You know, we look at, you know, all these intangible sort of characteristics that make up champion athletes or athletes that excel. And, you know, I'm just reading through the paper and some of the research that you sent over as well. And it's interesting to see that, you know, through the developmental years, 13, 14, and 15, there was one study that mentioned that, you know, athletes were self sort of, you know, self-centered and taking themselves out of the sport that they were involved in, baseball being one of them, but, you know, self-voluntarily taking them out of themselves, out of the sport, because they couldn't succeed. I wonder if we had trained them to, you know, use their visual performance a little bit better, would they have participated longer in that particular sport?
Yeah, you know, that brings to mind an interesting book, Malcolm Gladwell's book. I think his Tipping Point is the one he has this in, about Canadian hockey players. Of how depending on the year you're born, or the month of the year you're born, actually, how that helps you train better and get more attention and actually move forward. Well, vision is the same thing. If we can get the vision identified, and if you just have the vision checked of kids, and you pick up their vision deficit early, correct it, they may perform better, get better coaching, and actually move further in their sport and enjoy it better.
Right. That's sort of like the self-fulfilling prophecy. You're referring to the research done on relative age, the athletes that were born in certain parts of the season with age-determined sports like baseball, for example. Kids who are born early in the year basically have a year advantage over kids who are born late in the year. And you're right, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And this is what makes me think that, you know, sports vision being one of those untapped potential areas is really going to help a lot of young athletes achieve to levels they never dreamed of before, if we can understand it. So that being said, what can you tell us about sports vision? What would we as parents, coaches, athletes, performance business people, you know, long-haul driver, truck drivers, what would we need to know to sort of get into the, I guess, the trends of visual performance?
Yeah, you know, the first thing is to make sure your eyes are evaluated by someone who knows how to evaluate what you're trying to get. If you just walk into a doctor's office and say, check my eyes, they'll check that you have no serious disease, and they'll say, pat you on the back and say, go home. But if you go in there and say, I want to be able to do this task here, and I need vision at this level to do that, and I want you to get me that kind of vision, now we have a different scenario. Now we get the doctor working on your behalf, as they always would, to get you the vision you need to perform well. And that's really the key, to be familiar with what kind of vision is necessary for what you want to do. I give an example. Think about a librarian. A librarian who spends most of their day reading and looking at things up close, I'm not going to fix their vision to be perfect at 30, 40, 50 feet away. I'm going to fix them to be very sharp and comfortable up close, because that's what they're doing all day. If I'm talking to a truck driver, though, who's looking at the distance on the road all day and has to worry about fog and worry about the day getting short and getting dark early, they need to have very sharp vision, very good contrast sensitivity. They have to be able to appreciate things very quickly and process that information quickly, and then they have to react to it. Someone, a deer runs across the road, like I had once, they have to be able to see that, pick it up quickly, and make a quick reaction. And that's the same thing you need to do in sports. So it really comes down to telling the doctor what you need to have done.
And it is kind of fascinating to think about that way, Dr. Labey. We talk about evaluating vision and understanding the vision that you need. And everybody and all our listeners out there are going to be familiar with the concept of having 20/20 vision and understanding that that must be good vision. And I aspire to have 20/20 vision. But looking into the research and looking into athletes specifically in sports where they need much better reaction time, be able to pick things up in a millisecond, 20/20 is really not where it's at. What kind of vision levels are we looking at the elite performance in sport?
Yeah, 20/20 really isn't what it's at, and 20/20 is the very general normal vision over the entire population. And you have to think about that's taking into account the athletes and the young teenagers who have very, very good vision, and the older people who have less good vision, and it averages to about 20/20. We're not really looking for a vision at 20/20 at the elite athletes level. We're looking for vision much better than that. And what's interesting is each sport has a different requirement. You know, baseball, the average is 20 over 12. 20 over 12 means that you can see from 20 feet, the athlete can, what a normal person only sees from 12 feet. So the athlete can be 8 feet farther away and still see the same thing. That's just the average for baseball. In fact, we have several baseball players every year that reach the 20 over 8 level. 20 over 8 is the best vision humanly possible. That means that the athlete sees from 20 feet what the average person sees from 8 feet. So that's 12 feet farther away. And that's amazing vision. That picks up flies on who knows what where. But the key is to make sure the doctor knows what sport you're playing, because we did a work with the U.S. Olympic team at the Beijing Olympics and found that different sports have different vision requirements. Well, that's not a big surprise. Archers need to have good vision. The softball team had to have good vision. But boxers don't have to have good sharp vision. They have to have other attributes of the visual system to succeed in what they're doing. So what you want to do with your vision is key.
It's fascinating. If you're an athlete out there and you got 20/20, let's say, your average, and you aspire to improve that, is there any way to make the jump to something like 20/12 or 20/8?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We get asked that all the time, if you will. The people come in and say, fix my vision to this level. Well, unfortunately, that isn't quite as easy as it sounds. What happens is your eyes and your brain have to work together. If your brain only can see 20/20, I can't do anything in your eye to get you to see better than 20/20. If your brain can see 20/10 and your eyes limit you to 20/20, we have a lot of work we can do to improve you to 20/10.
So what you're saying is your brain's capacity to process information is really the limiting factor when it comes to how you can perform in terms of the visual field?
Well, we're talking about sharpness of vision, what you're looking at straight ahead. So you want to try to distinguish your sharpness of vision in looking forward into a target that you want to look at versus your field of vision, which is your peripheral side vision, which is much, much worse in terms of sharpness. And those are really two separate things. They're two different visual skills. Think about, again, the boxer and the baseball player. The boxer needs very good peripheral vision. The baseball player doesn't give a hoot about peripheral vision. He needs very good sharp vision to pick up the spin of the ball and the pitch. So those are two separate things. We can correct / train many of those things. We can't, obviously there's limitations involved, but most of the time, fortunately, when we're seeing these players, especially the pro level, the limiting factor isn't their brain, it's something in their eye with a small focusing problem.
Dr. Labey, I'm thinking that if in order to evaluate your brain's ability, or if whether your brain can see 20/10 or 20/8, it's probably more complicated than just looking at that little spot on the wall with the little letters on it. There must be a bit more significant evaluation that you have to undergo in order to get that figured out first.
You hit it right in the head there. That's definitely the case. Then when you go to the doctor's office, unfortunately, the test that is universally used in the office is an eye chart that's black on white, and you have to go down reading from the big letters down towards the bottom smaller letters until you have trouble, and that's your vision. I can't think of hardly anything in the world that you have unlimited time to view that's 100% contrast that's important. Most of what we're doing, like driving on a foggy day, we have a very short amount of time to see something that's usually pretty faint, low contrast, and usually pretty small. And when we test these athletes, we test them under those conditions. We give them targets to look at that we only show for 300 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, very short time, snap of a finger. We show them that are very faint, low contrast, and we show them very small. And they have to figure out what that is based on those very short looks they get.
So quite a bit more practical of an evaluation period there. So now that you've established what the brain can see and you've evaluated what the eyes are capable of doing, now you can work with any particular athlete or any person for that matter on trying to improve it. What about non-surgical or training techniques that somebody could employ? Is there something that you can do there that you can see dramatic improvements with?
Well, we created what we call the vision pyramid. And if you try to envision in your mind a pyramid, like in Egypt, those pyramids have been around for thousands of years. They stand for thousands of years because they're very strong. And they have a very strong base. And what we've done is try to figure out, based on our 20-plus years of doing this, what is the base, what's the next level up on the pyramid, what's the next level up on the pyramid, what functions those are, and then how to measure them, and then how to fix or train them, if you will. At the very basis of the pyramid is just the pure sharpness of vision, the sharpness in each eye and the contrast sensitivity, the ability to see faint things as opposed to high contrast black on white things. That's the bottom level. That's not really trainable, but that's fixable using either regular conventional contact lenses or glasses or even special tints. You might recall Nike had a had a contact lens tint program a couple years ago, amber and green contact lenses, right?
Right, I remember.
And that was to improve contrast. So those two, and if you don't have a good base of the pyramid, everything above that falls apart. It's not very useful. So to go higher up and train hand-eye coordination, for example, so someone has really good hand-eye coordination, but when they get out in the field, they can't see squat, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And so you want to start at the bottom and those visual acuity contrast, measure it, and then correct it, maximize it to the sport they want. And each of those is one in the right eye and one in the left eye, right? We have two eyes there. The next level up is how does the brain use the two eyes together? Now we're talking about stereo depth perception, 3D vision. Well, that can be trained. In fact, there's a story back in World War II, back in Hawaii. Soldiers there were trained to very, very, very fine stereo vision to see the enemy airplanes flying overhead, since they had just experienced that on December 7th, flying overhead to be able to pinpoint exactly how far away they are and be exact on every one of their shots with the anti-aircraft guns. And they were trained to very, very, very sharp levels of stereo at very great distances. So that is definitely a trainable function if it's deficient. Now, if it's very good, there's no reason to train it. You move up to the next level. Next level is how does the brain decide what to do with that visual information? How fast does it process it, and how does it decide what to do with it? Well, there's actually several programs out on the market now that can be used to improve that, and we're starting just now with two of the Major League ball clubs, a very controlled, randomized, prospective, placebo-controlled trial of one of those very popular company systems to see if we can play these games with these guys and get them to perform better in decision-making related to their vision. Hopefully we'll have some results on that by the end of the season to see if that really helped or not in the players that had the training. Once you've done that, now we know that the brain takes the visual information in well, can see it well, can put it together well in both eyes, can decide about it well. Now the question is, how does it bring in the hands or the feet, depending on the sport, to integrate that? Now we're talking about the things that you're having in mind, I think, as far as training goes, hand-eye coordination, reaction time, anticipation time, things like that. And if you get all that trained up, now you're on the top of the pyramid. You got excellent on-field performance.
Well, I tell you what, we want to get everybody to the top of the pyramid. So if you can stick around for this break, I'd like to come back and talk about that eye-hand dominance, the ocular dominance. I'd like to also talk to you about the quiet eye. And, you know, the brain speed and the brain processing training, that's always been a fascinating topic. Maybe we can get into that a bit more after the break, Dr. Labey.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Oh, great. So coming up, stay tuned, everybody. Coming up after this break, a little more on sports vision, performance vision with Dr. Labey, assistant clinical professor for Harvard School of Medicine, right here on Crush Performance. Stay tuned.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
We are back on Crush Performance. I am Craig Moonen, and that's Jeff Kershaw, con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And the manly voice that you just heard there told you to go to the website. You should do that. CrushPerformance.com. There you will find links to all kinds of ways to contact us, including Twitter feeds, including Facebook page, as well as an email. And we are monitoring the text today at 10-12-60. Crusher, what was the text question of the day?
Are you born with it? Nature versus nurture. It's been an ongoing discussion since the early times of human performance, and you know, we want to know what you think. Are you born with it, or can you train it? And today, his topic is no exception: visual training. We're hearing some great things from Dr. Labey, the assistant clinical professor at Harvard School of Medicine. Dr. Labey, thanks for staying on the line.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, it was a great conversation prior to the break. And, you know, I want to get into this eye-hand dominance thing, this ocular dominance. We know that, you know, our vision might not be everything we think it is. We were standing in our world and we see things like we have our entire life. Now we sit with you guys and you're telling us, wow, your vision's really messed up. You know, what might some people find, and what have you found with some of your athletes? Because I know even from left to right, we talk about the brain's ability to process information. There's a lot of variables there that we might not even be aware aware of that are affecting the way we perform in the real world?
Yeah, there's no question. Before I tell you about that, just to give a little hint to your text question there, there's a great book that may give some insight into that question. It came out last year by David Epstein from Sports Illustrated.
Yep.
Called The Sports Gene. Have you heard of that book?
Yeah, The Sports Gene, absolutely.
That's a great book, and that gives a little insight, I think, into that nature, nurture, you're born with it or not type of idea, and there's a great section about vision in that book as well.
Yeah, and it mentions the work done with the Dodgers with you and Dr. Rosenberg as well, and that's a fascinating experiment. The part I like about that story is when Tommy Lasorda was kind of the naysayer, and you guys went on to predict, you know, probably two of the greatest rookie of the years ever to come out of that organization, probably in baseball history, just based on visual performance. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, that was a great, you know, you think about like you know, the 1880s in the West in the United States, and how the boom time and how things happened. That was kind of a little bit Wild West. You know, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of trying to feel our way through. We were putting guys through an hour of vision testing. We found out that half of that was worthless, and we honed it down over the years. But people were interested. It was a time of wanting to explore the boundaries. What can we do to make it better? In fact, you mentioned ocular dominance before the break. Reggie Smith came to us early on as the batting coach of the Dodgers, asking us, you know, is this eye-hand, left-hand, right-hand, right-eye, left-eye dominance, cross-dominance, same dominance? Does it mean anything? What's the story there? And that was one of the first things we looked at for the Dodgers, actually, back in the 90s, to try to figure out whether dominance really makes a role in sports or in baseball.
And the outcome, do you have a definitive answer to that yet?
Actually, I think there's a pretty good outcome. We published a paper several years after we started with the Dodgers, showing that there was actually no benefit to the same or crossed hand-eye dominance. Either right hand, right eye, or right hand, left eye dominant. It didn't make a difference in your performance at the plate. When we looked at that further, we realized that the problem is really this whole concept of eye dominance. There's no question that there's right and left-handed people and that you're better off with one hand or the other. There's no question about that. That's even mapped into the brain specifically showing that. But in the eyes, our eyes are designed to work together. Our hands aren't designed to work together, and our feet aren't designed to work together. At least we don't take a step with both feet. We take a step with one foot. But the eyes normally should be working together 100%. And when you talk about dominance, you're talking about one eye being better, superior, over the second eye, and that's contrary to normal physiology of how the brain uses the eyes. So we found that when you do a lot of testing, you find that all the different tests of eye dominance give different results, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if different tests give different results measuring the same thing. You imagine having a yard and having three people come in and measure it, and you have a different size yard and you're paying by the foot. That doesn't sound very good. And so when you look deeper into this topic, you find out that really this eye dominance question doesn't exist. There's eye preference. If forced to choose, people will choose one eye or the other. But if not forced to choose, people want to use both eyes together. And so when a batter is trying to hit a baseball, he turns his head so both eyes are towards the pitcher. He doesn't just turn one eye towards the pitcher. And so if you're right or left eye dominant, it doesn't really matter. You're using both eyes to perform in sports.
Yeah, see, I like this. I like this concept because I think I've seen that, you know, firsthand in a lot of different sports, you know, especially with the batters. You take somebody like Tony Bautista, whose, you know, batting stance was incredibly unorthodox. He would stand facing the pitcher so both eyes could be there, and then he would get into his swing, timing and everything, and go off. And we also see some of this work being done in tennis as well, you know, teaching athletes to use both eyes and position their heads and their body position so they have an optimum view of the court and the ball. And I think this is something where we can really, really influence the outcome of sports performance and athletes in a number of sports.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty quick fix that, you know, anyone could do in their garage type of thing. If you're working if you're playing yourself, you're working with your child, you know, you can just make sure that their stance and their way they approach the plate and the way their head is positioned towards the pitcher is making it sure they use both eyes. We did some work last year with one of the teams with these special glasses that took a picture of what the player saw and also put on that picture what the player was looking at with their eyes. It measured the eye position and what the eyes were looking at. So for the first time, we could actually see what a batter with live pitching was looking at when they were at the plate. And interesting results coming out of that, and that goes into quiet eye talk a little bit. But we found that a lot of the younger players were just turning their head just a slight amount and only using one eye. One eye, the other eye is being covered up by their nose. And the more proficient, the higher level players towards the AAA and Major League side were turning their head completely using both eyes, and the pitcher was centered in the visual field. And there was a really interesting difference between that lower ball and the higher level ball of what people were doing to be successful.
Very interesting. We're talking to Dr. Daniel Levy, assistant clinical professor at the Harvard School of Medicine. Well, the quiet eye phenomenon is a very interesting. Of course, Joan Vickers here at University of Calgary really did some groundbreaking work on that. And it does go to show that where you focus inside of a sport performance can really, really influence the outcome. And I think this is fascinating. And the trainable factors here, the training potential here and the influence on outcome performance is staggering.
Yeah, it's really amazing, whether it's basketball, hockey, golf, as we're showing in baseball, the effect with very little effort to make sure that your eye is staying very stable, looking directly at the critical point, whether it's the release of the pitch of the ball by the pitcher, whether it's looking at the rim when you're doing a basketball shot, whether your placement, where you're looking on the hockey blade, if you're the goalie as the opposing team comes towards you, or in golf, if you're just focusing on the ball and not following the ball once you strike it, to putt, for example, just spending that extra time keeping your eyes fixed on that position through the shot, through the play, shows a significant increase in your effectiveness and your success.
It seems so obvious, but I suspect that if it was really this obvious, then you probably wouldn't be as successful in this industry as you already are. I've got to think there's a ton of athletes out there that probably don't even realize they have bad vision. And especially at the high end of sports, you talk about working with Major League Baseball teams with Olympic level athletes. What are we seeing now in terms of when people come in there getting their routine physicals and just being aware of all the athletes in their organization? Where is sport vision ranking here? And are there people that are just slipping through the cracks?
Well, you know, that's the fun part about it. You know, we talked about 1992 when this all started, and now we're 2014 here, and it's really come quite a long way. It's hard to believe how much vision has become important. I'll give you an example. We started in 92. The Dodgers, you know, in Toronto, maybe there was some interest, but nothing really materialized. And in Los Angeles, they did a research study with us, while, you know, UCLA. But there were very few people interested in vision. People understood you have to see, but if you got saw 20/20, that was good enough. What we have happening now is we see, for example, just today, I reviewed three or four eye exams on draftees for some of, you know, for the June draft for baseball. And so teams are getting the vision reports. They're sending people to the doctors to get checked. They're getting the reports to, you know, to us to review, because they want to know if there's anything in their visual system that's, you know, that's either a green or red flag to help them decide, you know, how to rank someone in the baseball draft. We're seeing university programs, both in the medical MDs and also in the optometry programs, developing specific sports vision programs at the universities. There's several across the United States that are already up, and there's a couple more that are coming, and hopefully at Harvard we'll have one coming in the very near future as well, where people can go and it can become a center, just like any other medical field, of research, of patient care, of correction of problems, and so forth. Almost unheard of, undreamable 20 years ago when we started. Now it's becoming something that everyone recognizes, the final frontier to try to, you know, let's say legally, without using stuff that you can't use, perform better and be more successful. And I'm finding high school students coming into my office, you know, saying, I want to play, you know, in college, I want to do well there, and I want to go on, maybe have a career, fix my eyes, doc, make sure I do well. And so we're really seeing people aware of it, coming in, getting the exams, getting the fixes, and performing better on the field.
Dr. Levy, yeah, this is fascinating stuff, because I've seen it work, and you know, there's a lot of things that people can do, and now it starts to get overwhelming, kind of like the supplement world, right? There's so much crap out there and misinformation. We're seeing a real big influx now of little gadgets and little toys and little programs. It's almost getting overwhelming right there. Any sound advice for people looking to, you know, maybe start looking at this as an area of performance development in terms of what they should avoid or what they should look at legitimately that might help them out?
Yeah, you know, I guess one of the signs of success is when you have people, you know, coming on board with all kinds of different things,
right,
wanting to ride the wave. So, you know, in one hand, that's very gratifying, because that means that we're on the right path and we're helping people, and people are playing better. But on the flip side, we end up having all these different systems, and unfortunately, you know, the medical literature is somewhat to blame, because sometimes these things get written up in medical journals without having sufficient review and peer review to kind of try to ferret out the stuff that doesn't have the scientific merit. There was just recently one of those systems that came out, got a lot of airplay, but there's some serious concerns regarding the data coming out of that system. And so it's tough, and it's really tough. The best way is to find a doctor that you trust, somebody who's objective, someone who's willing to review for you and kind of guide you through the science of a lot of this stuff to make sure it really has standing. Anything coming out of university obviously is going to be pretty believable. Something that's coming out of the person who's telling you about it who has an interest in selling you that is probably going to be not too believable. And that's really kind of buyer beware. And just like anything you buy on the market, you have to be very careful and be sure that there's really benefits you're doing it.
Great. Well, Dr. Labor, we are out of time here. Listen, we could have you on for 2 hours for crying out loud. We didn't even get to touch on the brain speed and the training of the processing of information. Maybe we'll hold that for another day. And I'll just let you know that we really appreciate your time today. All this insight is great. And you're right. This is the next frontier in sports performance without question.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. To me, it's exciting. I'd love to talk about it, and I'd be happy to spend as much time as we need to talk about it. It's great fun.
Great. Dr. Labor, appreciate your time tonight.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
All right. There you go. Dr. Daniel Labby, assistant clinical professor at Harvard School of Medicine. You can check out his website. It's 20 over 8. 20, the word over and the number 8. Fantastic stuff right there. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk about how this all might apply to you, your sport, and your general life right here on Crush Performance. Stay tuned. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Craig Moonen. You are Jeff Kreshel. Today, we're talking sport vision training. Just a reminder, get to us on the website. That's crushperformance.com. We're also following the old text today at 10:12:60. We had a text question of the day. Nature or nurture? Do you think it's natural ability or do you think it's something that can be trained? Any of your specific sport traits or characteristics? Maybe we're talking vision specifically today, but really anything.
Anything.
And
yeah.
We got a ton of texts coming in. What we got over there, buddy?
Yeah, well, here's a good one. I think vision, you're born with. Yeah, and it's true. It's highlighted in sports where kids are able to separate themselves at a young age. We kind of talked about that earlier with Dr. Labby, and it's no question about it. Kids that have a visual advantage are going to perform better, whether they're more skilled or not. That's just the bottom line. And this is where the interesting thing comes into play, because we know the eyes develop as you grow as well. But it's not necessarily how good your vision is, but how well your brain processes the information, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of variables there. And that's why we really talk about, we talk about specialization at an early age. Man, having your young athletes getting exposed to as many variables as possible in as many different platforms as possible, not only helps the physical literacy of that athlete, it also helps the brain's ability to process information in any given setting. The more things you can do in a training setting, the more things you're going to be able to do in sport, and vision's certainly one of them, right? Here's another one from Kurt. Could you ask the doctor about tips for golf? It would be awesome. Great interview with insanely smart guest. Yeah, he's insanely smart, no question. His research is, inarguable, the best, some of the most cutting-edge stuff on the market right there. But when it comes to golf, here's an interesting one. That is not a sport you would think would be a high visual performance kind of a sport, a high visually demanding, right? But here's what we know. The guys who pay attention to their vision and their gaze control are better golfers. And there was a great study done, and actually it was done by Joan Vickers out of University of Calgary, where she looked at the gaze patterns and the focal points of the best golfers as opposed to the golfers that weren't so great. And these are all professional PGA guys. And what they found was, on the driving range, when hitting the ball, the guys that had better accuracy, better drives, better consistency when striking the ball had different gaze patterns. Their focal point was not just on the ball, but on the back of the ball, but on a certain spot, like the size of a pinhead. And they would focus through the swing, through contact, and hold that focus beyond the ball strike. Then they would gaze and look where they were, and boom, they were better golfers. But the most impressive thing they found was on the greens. Here's what they found. The better putters had different gaze patterns and different focal points when they were getting set. And what they found was the guys who weren't so great on the greens when they were doing their tracking and lining up the ball, first of all, they didn't line up the ball well, but when they're going from the ball to the hole, ball to the hole, they never had the same gaze pattern twice, where the better golfers picked a spot on the ball and a spot to the hole, which is like a blade of grass. I'm not talking a real finite point. And they went back and forth, really, really calculated the same path every single time. And they had a much, much higher putting percentage than guys who didn't. So there are visual keys to golf as well, which is fascinating to me. And that goes back to that quiet eye phenomenon that you see in basketball, hockey, and in baseball.
Keep those texts coming in until the end of the show. We're going to randomly pick somebody and give away our last set of Marmot Basin lift passes. So keep them coming in. 10, 12, 60. Just back to Dr. Labey. Unbelievable guest, as the text mentioned there. I mean, he just great. So knowledgeable and really speaks so well. A lot of anecdotes. But some real key concepts that blew me away there. The idea that you can have some kind of superhuman vision beyond 2020, like 28 vision, to me, that's like Superman, like X-ray vision stuff.
It almost is.
Yeah, freakish that you can see something 14 feet before the average person, for example, in baseball, being able to track a ball that much further out. Huge advantage.
Studies done on Babe Ruth show that his vision was 12% faster than the average person way back in the day when they didn't have all these fancy tests, and he was 90% more efficient with his visual performance than the average baseball player. Ted Williams was a 2010. The last man to hit 400 in the major leagues of baseball had a 2010 sports vision, which is almost at the precipice of human visual performance. So there's a good reason he was who he was. And you know, here's the cool thing that we're finding out is a lot of this is trainable. And we're doing it right now with our athletes, not just in baseball, but every sport. And an interesting thing in the first segment that Dr. Labey alluded to was this goes beyond sport. You know, if you think people who are driving or people who are, you know, have deteriorating vision and they're losing some of their depth perception or even some of the clarity, that kind of thing you can correct through proper exercises. And that's fascinating to me.
And you certainly, and anybody can do. I mean, you and me have done it, Crusher. We've done it on the show for a number of years now. And there's lots of local places here in the Edmonton area that can help you out. Zone Performance is one of them. You can go in there and get... That there's all kinds of different ways to evaluate where you're at and then to continually train and improve it. I mean, we've been on the NeuroTracker, the 3D analysis, there's all these little games and tests that you can do, the DynaBoard, just crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually quite fun too.
Yeah, and once you get the vision down, here's something interesting. It also goes to sports specificity. So, you know, they took all these great baseball players and they had Jenny Finch pitch to them. These are all great guys with unbelievable good vision. Piazza, Pujols, Mike Cameron, they all struck out. Bonds saw it, challenged him. Bonds refused to do it because Jenny Finch was making these guys look like fools. It's not that they couldn't see the ball. You know, they had it down. They could see the ball, but they weren't trained to hit a ball coming from that angle, that speed, that size of ball. So that's a fascinating thing as well. That just goes to show you how specific the human body is and how specific training has to get in order for you to excel at the world-class level of sport.
Yeah, that's what blows me away about these multi-sport athletes that can do it at a very high level, like the Deion Sanders and the Bo Jackson, guys that are just at the pinnacle of the sport in two different areas, and they can just turn it on and off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, we got to thank Dr. Labey, Assistant Clinical Professor, Harvard School of Medicine. Check out his website, 20 over 8, the number 20 over 8. And hey, next week, stay tuned. We are tackling maybe one of the biggest issues in the industry, your diet. We're talking the diet, performance, weight loss, whatever you want next week on Crush Performance.
For the Crusher, for the Con Man, I'm Moo. We'll see you on Crush Performance next week.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.